And good morning. This is Talking Animals. My guest today will be Dr. Temple Grandin, the best-selling author and internationally renowned expert on animal cognition and autism. We'll speak with her in a few moments. Later in the program, we'll give away tickets to see Southside Johnny, who's playing the Capitol Theater February 1st. I also want to mention, for the first time today, starting 2 weeks from now, February 6th, Talking Animals will be airing 2 hours earlier at 9 a.m. And we've launched a brand new website, which I hope you'll visit at talkinganimals.net. Okay, onward. We're kicking off the show not with an animal tune, as we normally would, but with part of the soundtrack from the HBO film called Temple Grandin by composer Alex Werman here on Talking Animals.
My name is Temple Grandin. I'm not like other people. I think in pictures, and I connect them.
Temple Grandin.
right. Well, unfortunately, we're having some difficulty reaching Dr. Grandin, confirm the interview, and so I'm going to hope that we do connect with her at some point. We're going to switch things around and get into some animal news and announcements now. So let's start off with kind of some of the biggest news of the last 24 hours or thereabouts, by which I'm referring to the U.S. government, the government scientists have agreed that all but 50 of hundreds of chimpanzees kept for federally funded research should be retired from labs and sent to a national sanctuary. The proposal from the National Institute of Health Committee also said all of the chimps should have plenty of room to play and climb. The NIH Council's working group on Tuesday approved the proposal, which also calls for major cuts in grants to study chimps in laboratories and return to breeding them for research. Already 9 chimpanzees arrived Tuesday at Chimp Haven outside Shreveport, Louisiana, from the University of Louisiana at Lafayette's New Iberia Research Center, which no longer has an NIH chimp research contract. 7 more are expected Thursday, and another 95 will arrive over the coming months, sanctuary officials said. And another story that has big Florida implications and yet was a gigantic national story, including a huge sprawling piece in Sunday's New York Times, headline: a cat's 200-mile trek home leaves scientists guessing. The tale starring survival instinct. Nobody knows how it happened. An indoor house cat who got lost on a family excursion, managing after 2 months and about 200 miles to return to her hometown. Even scientists were baffled by how Holly, a 4-year-old tortoise shell, who in early November became separated from Jacob and Bonnie Richter at an RV rally in Daytona Beach, Florida, appeared on New Year's Eve, staggering, weak and emaciated in a backyard about a mile from the Richter's house in West Palm Beach. Quote, are you sure it's the same cat? Wondered John Bradshaw, director of Anthrozoology Institute at the University of Bristol in England. In other cases, he has suspected the cats were just strays and the people have got kind of a mental justification for expecting it to be the same cat. But Holly not only had the distinctive black and brown harlequin patterns on her fur, but also an implanted microchip to identify her. I really believe these stories, but they're just hard to explain, said Mark Beckoff, a behavioral ecologist at the University of Colorado. Maybe being street smart, maybe reading animal cues, maybe being able to read cars, maybe being a good hunter. I have no data for this. There is, in fact, little scientific dogma on cat navigation. Migratory animals like birds, turtles, and insects have been studied more closely and use magnetic fields, olfactory cues, or orientation by the sun. Scientists say it is more common, although still rare, to hear of dogs returning home, perhaps suggesting, Dr. Bradshaw said, that they have inherited wolves' ability to navigate using magnetic clues. But it is also possible that dogs get taken on more family trips and that lost dogs are more easily noticed or helped by people along the way. Cats navigate well around familiar landscapes, memorizing locations by sight and smell, and easily figuring out shortcuts, Dr. Bradshaw said. Speaking of closer to home, the monthly beekeeping workshops are going to be offered at USF Botanical Gardens each Saturday. The once-a-month sessions, year-long series, began this past Saturday at the University of South Florida. And they're part of a community outreach effort focusing on environmental science, said Director Lori Walker. We, as a garden, have been able to talk about the plight of the bees and give people a chance to experience that hands-on. So I can sign up for a single class or as many as they want. Even if someone has missed the introductory session, go to www.gardens.usf.edu. Also locally, local business owner Nina Perino of Love All Beings Pet Sitting LLC is co-hosting Ride to the Rescue on Sunday, February 10th. from noon to 5 p.m. at Quaker Steak and Lube Restaurant located at 10,449th Street, North Clearwater. The event proceeds will benefit Pug Rescue of Florida. There'll be a biker dog contest, raffles, and music by the band Full Tilt. More information and how you might donate to the event, you can contact Tanya at 615-310-8474. All right, we'll come back to some more of these. We'll hear a bit more music. We'll try again to see if we can connect with Dr. Granite. It's Talking Animals on WMNF. All right, well, I'm afraid, for reasons quite puzzling, not able to reach Dr. Grandin. Confirms, as I say, with her. Been on the show three other times, so I can only guess that some sort of personal emergency must have come up. And we'll proceed, try another round of ways to try to contact her. So keep our fingers crossed. Meanwhile, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner. This is Drew Hastings with part of a piece called Farming 101 on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
I lived out there for a month before I figured out that red stick on my mailbox wasn't a country 911 system. It is not easy. I'm going to make it work. I don't give up. Livestock, that's my dream. Livestock, man. But I'll tell you what, people think it's easy. You read up on it and it's... No, uh-uh. My first deal, I got ripped off. I bought a herd of Black Angus hogs, right? I thought they looked short coming off the truck. Pygmy cattle my ass. I've tried growing crops, but you'd find more cornrows on an NFL team than I could pull off my land. So I called Mr. Grimes. He's the county ag agent for my county, you know, like the Mr. Kimball dude, right? When I call him, he comes out, you know, and takes soil samples, talks to me extensively about my background. Well, he tells me the best thing for me to plant is a for sale sign in the front yard. It is not easy, my friend, on the farm. You have any idea what well water does to highlights? Do you have any? You don't. You know, I knew it was going to be hard. When I first moved out there, six barn cats. I have one left. One. Ladies and gentlemen, do you have the tenacious, feral sumbitch that ever walked the planet? Nothing kills them. You run over them with a pickup truck and they just meh.
All right. That was Drew Hastings with a piece of Farming 101. Sort of selected with Dr. Grandin in mind. So that was from his album, Irked and Miffed. And just going to sort of keep flipping the elements of the show around in the still cautiously optimistic hope that we may still speak with Dr. Grandin just at a different time than we had imagined. So with another thing in mind, selected with Dr. Grandin, in mind, and her affinity, of course, for cows, and suggested by my friend Bev, we're going to hear an animal tune now. This is Corb Lund with Cows Around on Talking Animals.
And share what I have found. May you always have cows around. What else you gonna spend that extra money on? What else is gonna get you up hours before dawn? What else is gonna keep you toiling on and on and on? May you always have cows around. Come on, you know that you got too much time on your hands. not nearly enough complication in your plans. You need to invite all of the frustration that you can, man. You always have cows around. Well, everything is better with cows around. Living in town sometimes brings me down. Let me bestow this western blessing, leave you saddle bound. You always have cows around. What else could make the bishop swear like a sailor might? What else can cause such tension between a man and his wife? What else could ever bring all these enhancements to your life? May you always have cows around. What else is gonna get out when you don't close the gate? What else will make you prematurely show your age? What else will take a run at you in a fit of bovine rage? May you always have cows around. But everything is better with some cows around. Living in town sometimes brings me down. And although this western blessing leaves you cattle bound, may you always have cows around. Hereford, Highland, Simmental, Welsh, Black, and Maine, and Jew, Keenina, Limousine, Shorthorn, Charley, Watusi, too, Texas, Longhorn, Corrienne, Romagnola, Galloway, and Angus, Brahma, Brangus, Jersey, Guernsey, Holstein, hey! You might have had to let them dig for oil and gas. You might have had to turn the place to an exotic game ranch. You might have had to do all kinds of things to raise the cash so you'd always have cows around. Well, how else you gonna lose it all like Daddy did? What else will make sure you leave nothing for your kids? It's too late now, you know it is. You might as well admit that you've a badly flawed and sentimental masochisticness, and that despite all the statistics and the advice that you get, you will always have cows around. Yeah, everything is better with cows around. Living in town sometimes brings me down. Well, you won't know what you're missing till you hear that sound. May you
around. All right, that was Corb Lund with Cows Around. And so right now, gonna try one more thing. Hold on, let's see if we get lucky here. Let's hear this in the meantime.
When our soul was torn into, searching for you, I've been searching for you. Where you been? Where you running to? Where you got to go? What you got to do? I don't care where we're going, just wanna be with you. Put your head on my shoulder, tell me what you've been through. When I lose my focus, you remind me of the truth. Lift us up to the heavens for a bird's eye view. Sometimes I look at you and just
just smile, sit in the park, just laugh all day. Sometimes I just lose it with the things that you say, waiting by the subway, but we miss the train. We'll take the next one if you can pull me away. Keep me cool, down to earth, and no anxiety. Stay modest with a humble heart. Always one woman for me, over half of my soul. Shine bright, yes, you're there for me. Keep the ways of our fathers how it used to be. Moving forward, don't mean a race our history. Look to your ways and see a girl who wants to do the right thing. Dedicated to a life bigger than you or me. Build a temple in our hearts for His majesty. Stay simple, serve God, and keep our deeds clean. One woman.
All right, folks. And they said it couldn't be done. All right, so let's welcome back to Talking Animals. So with a little quick introduction, although I think Temple Grandin, Dr. Grandin, is someone who probably genuinely does not need any introduction, but she is a professor of animal sciences at Colorado State University, considered international expert on animal cognition and autism, is herself autistic, is a best-selling author, and was portrayed by Claire Danes in the Emmy-winning HBO film called Temple Grandin. So with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome Dr. Temple Grandin back to Talk
Animals. It's great to be here.
Thank you so much, Dr. Grandin. Sorry there was a little snafu, but we're thrilled to have you now. So over the years, we've spoken, I think, three other times on the show, the last, I think, being in 2009, and certainly a lot has happened in your career and life since then. I'd like to start off asking about something that happened fairly recently, not directly to you, but I'd like to get your thoughts on it. In the wake of the Newtown mass killing and the early reporting about gunman Adam Lanza having been diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome, I sort of thought of you and wondered how you felt about the suggestions, at least early on in the sort of developing story, that Lanza having Asperger's bore some sort of casual connection to this. Did it strike you as absurd, or were you indignant?
The problem with the diagnosis for things like Asperger's syndrome, it is a behavioral profile, and a lot of it gets into the doctor's opinion. What Adam Lanza did, there's no excuse for it, and you don't kill people, period. That's the way I was brought up. And if you kill people, the consequences are very severe, like life in prison or capital punishment, and you just don't kill people.
Sure.
And most people with Asperger's are subject to bullying. I mean, I was subject to horrible bullying and teasing when I was in high school. Kids would call me all kinds of names, like workhorse and tape recorder. And the only places where I got to get away from the bullying was the specialized interest things, like horseback riding and electronics club. And I am concerned about all the violent video games. I think these put a lot of ideas into kids' heads. Violent movies. I heard a really weird interview with Quentin Tarantino, makes a lot of violent movies, and he was very hesitant when asked about the effect of violent movies on things like shootings. And he got really hesitant, hemming and hawing, and didn't talk normally. He said, but to me, it's all fake. But then I got to thinking, I go, Quentin, you're on the movie set. You see that the fake blood's made out of Karo syrup with red food coloring in it. that the makeup's all fake. You know it's fake, but the person, movie-going audience, doesn't see the, you know, the forklift pallet loads of Karo syrup that you're using. You see that, but the movie audience doesn't see that, I think some of this violent stuff is affecting certain kids.
Right, and also I think, as you noted in one or more of your talks, sometimes, I'm not saying Quentin is one of those, but sometimes a lot of people on movie sets tend to be somewhere on the autism continuum.
Well, you know, half of Silicon Valley is somewhat on the autism spectrum. You wouldn't even have any radio station equipment if it wasn't the people on the spectrum. You see, I think there's a wide range of brains, and you can make a brain to be more social, or you can make a brain to be more cognitive. And then, you know, you have somebody who gets interested in computers and things like that, and instead of socializing, they get a good job out at Silicon Valley. One bad thing with Adam Lanza was he was allowed to become a recluse in the basement playing violent video games just nonstop. That's totally bad. First of all, that kid should have been dragged out of the basement and go out and get a paper route, just throw a paper route around.
Well, so it sounds like a couple things here, Dr. Grannon, that one is that people were sort of looking at, you know, the wrong thing, at least initially, when there was a lot of, you know, fuzzy reporting going on. But even beyond that, that there seemed to be some emphasis on, again, Asperger's for him, as opposed to what you're saying.
The vast majority of people with Asperger's are, you know, bully magnets and get bullied and don't do violent things, just like the vast majority of most people don't do violent things.
Sure.
And this kid was allowed to totally withdraw and become a recluse in his room. That's a really bad thing.
Right. In fact, one of the things that seems to be an ongoing message of yours is that, you know, whether it's Asperger's or really for anyone, anywhere, at least within reason, I guess, on the continuum, your contention has long been get them involved, get them out and about, get them engaged in things, and that's how you really kind of help propel.
Well, I was engaged in a lot of different things when I was in high school. I didn't do very much studying when I was in high school. I got sent to special boarding school, but I did a lot of horseback riding. I did a lot of barn cleaning, carpentry work, shingling the barn. I was out doing things. In fact, my school let me get off and not study. They actually made me attend classes, though. I had to show up for meals. One thing they did not allow is I was not allowed to just stay in my room and become a recluse. I had to be out doing things.
Yeah, you know, and one of the things, I want to, of course, talk to you a little bit about the HBO film and different aspects of that, but one of the things, obviously, it was a very successful film. A lot of people who maybe previously had not been all that familiar with you or your work suddenly were. But I also can't help thinking with some of the things I've heard and read, you know, around the time it came out and even subsequently, if some of those people, as much as they were, you know, inspired by you and your story, some of them may have ended up with sort of getting the story wrong a little bit, coming away with the inverse message, like, wow, Temple Grandin is amazing, truly one of a kind, rarefied, out of reach, when, you know, and not the...
Well, actually, it's not that rarefied, because working in a technical field in agriculture and around the meat plants, I saw people with Asperger's that run the maintenance shop, they run the data department. I met a rancher last year that I know was on the spectrum, undiagnosed, you know, a successful rancher, and he raised purebred cattle. There's a lot of people out there on the mild end of the autism spectrum doing a lot of different jobs. In fact, we're all the old people with Asperger's. Most of them are employed. And some of them have gotten diagnosed later in life because their marriages were a real mess. And that gave them insight into their relationships.
Sure. Well, no, I guess my only thought that I had and what I was trying to suggest is that I think there were probably a lot of people that saw the film, became, you know, sort of quickly acquainted with your story, and then thought, hey, you know, I could never do what Temple does, or my kid could never become Temple. She's one of a kind or whatever, when in fact a crucial part of your story has been, you know, that you're starting with your mom being just steadfast and getting you busy and out and doing stuff.
She got me out. She didn't let me just, you know, stay in my room, and I was always pushed to do new things. But on the other hand, no sudden surprises.
Right.
See, one of the problems you've got in autism is it's such a big spectrum. At one end of the spectrum, you got half of Silicon Valley, Steve Jobs, and Einstein, who had no language till age 3. At the other end of the spectrum, you got an individual who has much more severe handicaps. They remain nonverbal. They're going to have to live in a supervised living situation. And it's such a big spectrum. You don't have nonverbal dyslexics or nonverbal ADHDs. Those are a much narrower spectrum. And a lot of teachers didn't know how to work with the more severe kids. don't know what to do with the guys on the high end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing some of these guys get a handicapped mentality, and they're not learning basic things like how to order food at McDonald's, how to shop, you know, how to say please and thank you, how to shake hands. See, being a child of the 50s, those things were just pounded in, and they were pounded into all children. And I think this benefited a lot of the kids that were on the mild end of the autism spectrum.
Right. Well, Tan, I guess that was my point, is that you know, there is a lot of effort. Again, your own effort, your mom's effort, your science teacher, which you credit a lot, Mr. Carlock. I mean, you pushed yourself, your mom pushed you, your Mr. Carlock pushed you, and that's how you got launched and to eventually becoming Temple Grandin. So it's not, I guess my point is, you know, it's just a shame for people who just say, wow, well, that's extraordinary, she's amazing, which again are true, and I feel the same way.
Well, there's a lot of people, heads of big Silicon Valley companies that I know that are on the spectrum,
yeah,
and are very, very successful. I don't mention the live ones by name, only the dead ones. But Silicon Valley's run by people a bit on the Asperger spectrum. And the thing that's interesting is those techies tend to avoid the labels like the plague.
They
avoid the labels. They don't want to be labeled.
Right, because of the perceived stigma.
They don't want to be held back. And the thing that concerns me today is a lot of kids that are just kind of quirky and different, going nowhere. And one of the problems, and I think it's a very serious problem, is that schools have taken out all the hands-on classes. You know, like cooking, sewing, wood shop, metalworking, automobile mechanic.
Yeah.
They've taken that stuff out of the schools. And right now we have a shortage of the highly skilled trades, things like electricians and automobile mechanics and certified welders. And some of these kids now that are just getting in trouble and everything, you're just perfect in a lot of these trades. And you don't have that shop teacher anymore to get some of these kids turned around.
Right. And again, I think looking at your own history, those things were pivotal
But there's a lot of schools right now that don't have them.
Right.
I know kids that are on the spectrum that are in Future Farmers of America agriculture classes, and they're showing a steer at the local show and doing really well.
Yeah.
And there are, you see, in the meat industry, I've run into undiagnosed Asperger's everywhere. The plants would fall down if you didn't have these people. You know, it's the clever guy's kind of weird that invents the new equipment.
Right. Yeah. It's the people whose mind works that way.
That's right.
Yeah.
And now these kids are just getting, you know, I have deficits in learning math, but my ability in art was always encouraged. Always encouraged and always broadened. So I didn't just do the same horse head over and over and over again.
Although you did perfect that horse head, I understand.
Yeah, I perfected that horse head, but yeah. You know, you can't just let it, you know, now today it's anime. They draw the same anime character over and over and over again.
Yeah.
You've got to get them doing other kinds of artwork and broaden it out.
Sure.
They've got to learn how to do art on assignment. I mean, instead of just talking endlessly about things that interested me, well, people wanted me designing cattle chutes, not talking about them.
Right. Right. Well, let me let folks know this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, we're speaking with Dr. Temple Grandin. If you'd like to ask Dr. Grandin a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org. Well, not surprisingly, Dr. Grandin, given the nature of the show, I, of course, want to spend some time talking about animals and related things. But let me just ask you one other thing, sort of in a way we've been touching on indirectly. Did the film, the HBO film, create greater demand for you to speak? I mean, is there a greater, broader interest?
It really increased a lot of awareness. Yeah, I've gotten a lot more speaking engagements. And I've had a lot of kids write to me saying, well, you know, now I'm going to work really hard because I know that I can achieve. And that's really a good thing. The movie presented autism accurately. It showed my visual thinking accurately. And I want to add that not every individual on the spectrum is a visual thinker like me. Some are more of a mathematical thinker and may have trouble with reading. Others are strictly a word thinker and they think in words. There's a tendency in autism to be good at one thing and bad at something else. And we've got to build up that area of strength. The movie showed all my projects accurately.
Yeah.
I actually did all the projects that were shown in the movie.
Yeah. And so what you're saying is that one of the at least maybe more subtle messages is that depending on what kind of thinker someone who maybe is on the autism spectrum is, whatever their deficit might be can and, in fact, should be shored up.
Well, you want to work on deficits, but you don't want to work on deficits and neglect the areas of strength.
Right.
I mean, I've heard sad stories where the third grade teacher wanted to stop the kid from doing drawing and art. No, you don't take away art.
Yeah.
That's the thing that could be his career.
Sure.
Or if you have a third grader that's bored doing baby math, then bring a math book in from a higher grade and let him do a higher level of math, but he may need special ed and reading.
Right. So, so Dr. Grant, I know that for you, much of your work that we're talking about in terms of autism and Asperger's and helping educate folks and speak at conferences and give lectures. And by the way, I should quickly mention, so we don't, in case we run out of time, you are giving a lecture right in our fair state of Florida next week at the University of Florida on Thursday the 31st.
Well, I'm sorry I was late. I had just gotten off a plane.
No problem. No, I'm just happy that you're here now. But anyway, so obviously that's a big focus of your work. Now, how much of your work is, it's often interwoven, the work on animals, obviously, and
their kind. Well, I'm still doing a lot of work on animals. Yeah. I teach my class on animal livestock handling and design of facilities. That's a short course I teach each semester. Goes for 7 or 8 Tuesday afternoons. I'm still an animal welfare auditor instructor, and I do that at least twice a year. It's a 2-day course. I'm still doing some consulting with the meat plants, working on reviewing guidelines. I have graduate students doing animal research. One of the latest projects we just worked on was looking at how different mama cows defend their calves. And there's individual differences in how a mama cow defends her calf. And some mama cows will call a calf, others don't. And the reason we're doing that research is because now wolves have been reintroduced, you know, how are cattle dealing with the wolves? And one of the things we need to understand is how the mama cow protects her calf.
Mm-hmm. And have you, I mean, you've thought a lot over the years about animals and their thinking. Of course, you've written books on this topic, but often with sort of an academic-based approach to looking at these matters, sometimes findings or theses change a little or even a lot.
Well, animals have got our sensory-based thinkers and all the way they think. They don't have verbal language, so they're going to have to store an audio file, a visual file, a smell file. And there's actually some research that's come out since I wrote Animals in Translation, and that's the book where I really talk about the visual thinking, that actually kind of verifies that. And it was an interesting experiment what was done with horses. And they got a horse habituated to a blue and white umbrella opening up very, very suddenly. And the horse got to wear that no longer scared it. Now, but that habituation to that umbrella does not transfer to an orange tarp. See, an orange tarp is a totally different shape. It moves in a totally different way. So in the horse's brain, the orange tarp is something completely, totally brand new.
Yeah, and therefore alarming at first.
That was alarming.
Yeah.
And that training the horse to tolerate the blue and white umbrella did not train the horse to tolerate the orange tarp. Now, other kind of photographic things that are kind of umbrella-like, maybe other round things, maybe it would, that might... it might transfer to that, but a tarp is a great big huge square thing that flaps all around, moves totally differently, and the horse has to then, you have to start all over again training the horse to tolerate the tarp.
So that's
evidence right there that the visual memories are specific.
Right.
They're very specific.
So really, if anything, that sounds like something that's really more solidified some of the things you were talking about in animals translation. I'm just curious, has there been anything, you know, even minor or larger than that in recent years has sort of altered kind of what you had thought or concluded or maybe some of your earlier findings?
Well, visual sensory-based thinking, the studies have come out of, you know, proved that to be true. And there's a lot of practical experience with things like if you have cattle, for example, that have never been worked on foot. They may be very tame to a rider on a horse because that's safe and familiar. But then the first time a person on foot walks into the pen, they scatter and run away because that's totally novel.
Mm-hmm.
Now, just from practical experience, I've seen that happen just over and over and over again.
Sure. And again, it comes down to something you alluded to kind of for yourself or at least for others on the
Well, the thing is think
the
about
surprise.
It as a picture.
Yeah.
A man on a horse is a different picture than a man walking on the ground.
Right.
So if the animal is not trained to the man walking on the ground and he just suddenly sees it, they get scared and run away.
Sure. And again, it's the surprise element, something they're not used to, not habituated to, and suddenly this is very jarring.
Yeah, the man on the ground is a surprise because it looks completely different.
Sure.
Than the man on the horse.
Now, speaking of horses, Dr. Grant, obviously you grew up riding horses. Do you have a horse now?
Well, I'm spending about 90% of my time riding the airplane. So,
yeah, I'm sure.
I don't have any horse now. I do have a person that works for me that does design work, and he's got horses. He's riding, and I'm spending most of my time today riding the airplane.
Yeah, so it's really not practical, it sounds like, not only to have a horse, but probably not even to have, like, a cat or dog living with you. Just because you're
on the road 90% of the time.
Sure. Sure. I'd like to ask you a question. This actually came up, you know, when I was sort of getting the word out through various means, including Facebook. Someone had posted kind of an interesting question for you that I'd like to pass along.
Okay.
And just see what. So she says, I'm wondering if Dr. Grannon would be willing to explore her thoughts about, quote unquote, emotionality in animals
about
with
what?
Us.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Emotionality is the word she used. And she goes on to say, I've been learning more about the very large range of emotions shown by elephants in their complex social networks. Yet Dr. Grannon has said that the part of other people that has emotional relationships is not part of me. So I wonder how that affects her empathy with animals.
Well, I can really relate to animals that get scared, because that's an emotion that I have. I'm nonstop panic attacks, and so when animals get scared, I really, really relate to that. Now, looking at some of the research on the brain, you have different emotional systems. You have fear, and you can have an animal that genetically is a high fear animal or a low fear animal, and then you've got other emotional systems like separation distress. You know, like an animal gets separated from a social group, or a cat gets separated from its mother, and they're all upset, animal gets all upset, that's the separation distress brain system. There's also the mother-young nurturing system. That's the oxytocin system. That's a separate system.
Mm-hmm.
And these all affect, you know, how an animal is social, and these have all been proven to exist in the neuroscience literature. And one of the first scientists that worked on this years ago, in fact, was Jack Pantscap.
Okay. And Dr. Grannon, we're sort of, unfortunately, near the end of our time, but I at least want to get one or two callers involved, because I know people have been very eager to speak with you, as they are each time. So let's see if we can get one of those involved. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Dr. Temple Grandin. Hello, it's you.
Hello, can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
I cannot hear you.
She can't hear me, or she can't?
Can't hear you.
Can't hear the caller, Dr. Grannon?
I know you're going to have to repeat the question because cannot hear it.
Okay. A quick question, if you will, sir.
Yes, I'm a big fan. I saw her movie, and I'm applauding her work. And I just wonder if there's any thoughts on the connection with vaccines and autism. I know that's a touchy subject.
Sure. Well,
you'll have to repeat. I couldn't hear it.
Yeah, that's fine. Thanks for your call, sir. So he was saying he enjoyed the movie and enjoys your work, but chiefly his question was your view on the sort of the ongoing controversial topic of vaccines relative to autism.
That's the controversial thing. I think there are things in the environment that are interacting with susceptible genetics that's increasing autism. One thing I'm concerned about is puberty is so much earlier. I mean, I was 14 when I hit puberty. You've got kids today going into puberty at 10 years old.
Yeah.
And that may be having some bad effects. There's also starting to be some research that maybe plasticizers in water bottles, certain medications like epilepsy drugs taken in the first trimester, pesticides, you know, petroleum products, things like that might be interacting with susceptible genetics, especially if there's exposure in the first trimester. Older parents, where you get copying errors in the genetics. And with the vaccine problem, the only way to totally shut that door is to look at the regressive autism separately. This is where the child has some language and then they lose the language. And there's only one vaccine that possibly could have a problem. That's that pertussis diphtheria vaccine. If there is a problem, it would only be that vaccine, no other vaccine. And if you have autism in your family history or learning problems or epilepsy in the family history, it might be a really good idea to delay that shot until age 5.
Okay, thank you very much. So, Dr. Grannon, here's a question that I, at least last time we spoke, would have never occurred to me asked, but I've read a few things that circle around this. So where does ADHD fit in when we're talking about the autism continuum, or does it?
ADHD?
Yeah.
Well, ADHD and mild autism, that's mixed up all the time.
Right.
And a lot of the symptoms cross over. See, first of all, these diagnostic categories are not precise. They're behavioral profiles.
Right.
It's not like getting a diagnosis of a tuberculosis. They can tell you exactly what you've got. It's not a precise diagnosis. An ADHD has some genetic crossover and symptom crossover. Mild autism, they're going to be taking Asperger's out of the DMS-5, but mild autism and ADHD are mixed up all the time.
But not correctly so, right? It's a mistake.
Well, it isn't necessarily a mistake because you're dealing with a behavioral profile. It's not that accurate anyway.
I see. Okay, so it's...
It's a behavioral profile. It's like saying hijackers have a certain characteristics. That's a profile.
Right.
Diagnosis for things like autism and ADHD is no more accurate than profiling hijackers.
Okay. So it's a fuzzy, the profile is fuzzy, and so there's fuzzy thinking about
it's
the fuzzy
not,
profile.
There's no lab test. That
right.
You can say,
so it's not precise.
You have autism.
Right.
Or you have ADHD.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not that precise, it sounds like. It's just not
precise.
Yeah, I got you. So one of the things that came up a couple times during our chat, Dr. Grant, and we are just about near the end, I'm afraid, but is both you were talking about this and you were talking about this relative to animals, which is the element of sort of surprise. I'd be curious to know, when's the last time you were working on something or researching something or just doing something that really surprised you, whether it's triggering a sense of discovery or some other kind of surprise?
Well, I couldn't only hear part of the question because they'll make an airline announcement.
Okay. I was just asking when the last time, if you were working on something or researching something or in the midst of something that really surprised you, whether it was a sense of discovery or some other kind of surprise.
Well, there's always things that surprise you. I mean, I did some of the first research that showed that cattle that get all excited when you handle them have lower weight gain. Did that research over 15 years ago. And when I did that, had my students do that research, people thought I was crazy. But it turned out I was right. There's now like 200 other papers in the literature that have been showing the same thing. But when I first started doing that, people thought it was really crazy. You know, that's often true in science. Let's look at Margulis. Margulis is a scientist that found out that mitochondria in the cell at one time was free-living organisms. Mitochondria provide the cell's energy. And when she came up with that idea, other scientists thought she was crazy. But that's since been proven to be true. That's often true in science.
Yeah.
When you have a really true, groundbreaking discovery, a lot of other people don't want to believe it.
Sure. All right. Well, Dr. Grant, gosh, thank you so much for joining us again and talking animals.